This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 28th of October, 1955. The title of this lecture is Six Basic Levels of Processes. This lecture is 60 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
I want to talk to you on the 28th of October, 1955. Fourth London ACC, how about the six basic,
six levels of processing, but mostly and in particular the six levels of processing. In the first place, this battery of six is empirically derived. This should be clearly understood. There is no system underlying them. That's the first thing you're going to look for. That's the first thing you're going to be disappointed in. There's no underlying system. They were derived empirically, which is to say, a vast number of cases were polled, and the processes which had done them the most good were then put down in a list. And then some sort of arrangement was made of the list to get an approximate position of where the process was. But it was not even plotted originally against the tone scale. And we had six processes, each one of which had improved the majority of cases to which they were addressed. Now, some had been improved by one or two, and some had been improved by others. But each case that reported would report one of these, and then some offbeat process, or something of that order. And he'd say, well, case got the most improvement from this, and then he'd name an offbeat process. And all these offbeat processes, of course, were wild variables, one kind or another. And so we took the ones that were not wild variables, the ones that were constant, and these became the six basic steps. You should understand that, because I imagine you could look and look and look and try to find the system on which these were derived, and they were not theoretically or intuitively derived. They were derived crunch. What processes are working? These are the processes that are working. Put them on a list. Run everybody on all of them. You'll get a result there on everybody then. That's the way it was. After a while, observing these at work, I spiked them on the tone scale. And one of the PABs, I don't know which issue, probably about 49 or something like that, some little time ago, maybe earlier than that, carried these things plotted on the tone scale. And that was a theoretical plot, but it seemed like cases improved and used these processes in that order. And that was intuitively done, so that, of course, became subject to rearrangement. Now, we came into this quandary. Out of this and out of experience in using these specific processes, we discovered this fantastic thing. I found that underlying each one of them was a principal factor in a case. Well, that was very easy to find, since each of those processes was originally derived independently from some basic factor, you see. Now, it's very curious that there could have been many other basic factors, but these happen to be the most basic factors. So each one of these steps had a theory underlying it of one kind or another, independent of the other steps, and we discovered that it was necessary to work at this theory in two or three different ways in order to get a good run at the process itself. In other words, each one of these six basic steps was based on a theory, and then we expanded the underlying theory into some other processes, and now we evolve forward toward six levels of processing. It is still not a neat package. because its workability has never been overlooked in favor of the theoretical simplicity and grandeur of the system. Had I been a chairman, you could be very sure that the workability of these would have been disarranged or displaced in favor of a better system. We've never done that. So don't get upset when they don't fit the exact concept that you think they ought to be working on. They are worked as they are given because they work, and not because they better fit Ron's theories. Get the idea? There's a very important thing about research and investigation. You have to be productive enough of ideas and have enough ideas so that when you get one, you don't protect it with barbed wire electrified fences. You must be willing to throw your ideas away. And if you can throw them away, you can get research done. The usual course of research is quite another way. A fellow sitting in a desert of ideas suddenly clomps onto one idea, gives it a fast pass, finds out that this is the way Abbott and Park and Davis and Lilly and so forth evidently research, because they're always getting flubs on their drugs. They are. I mean, they put out this wonderful literature, and it just doesn't work. See, so that you take this, and then you spend all of your time being enthusiastic about and protecting this one idea. You spend all of your time going around selling it to people, not finding out whether or not it worked. I give you an exact case history. Engram scanning was evidently done by two auditors. They got this idea that you could run the whole bank out by scanning all the engrams, and this is way back when. And two auditors got this. They ran it on three, what we eventually called step ones. Took the very best case they could find, you see, and they scanned them through some engrams, and then spent the rest of their time convincing everybody how wonderful engram scanning was. Entirety of their effort thereafter was salesmanship on the subject of engram scanning, with resultant chaos. They never evidently took another look at engram scanning. See that? Well, that's not the right way to do research. So I'm not here to tell you that the six levels of processing are even vaguely perfect. But I'm here to tell you that each one of those levels is responsible for breaking a very large number of cases and can be fairly well counted upon to crack the case to which you address them. One level or another will, certainly, just by its basic extrapolation, which was that each one of them had brought about a marked change in a great many cases. When we surveyed all cases processed that we could lay our hands on, one of these processes had been run on the case that produced a good result. See, so we sort of had the field covered, and we have it covered now in these six levels of processing. But these six levels have this slight difference, is they more clearly state the theory underlying the level and then add additional processes on the system of that theory, which may or may not be as good as the original, but which in application work out usually to be more beneficial than the original. You're looking in your six levels of processing at perfection in evolution, with the perfection only 5 or 6 million light years out in front. You get the idea? So let's not get the idea that these six levels will never be changed. The fantastic thing is that six basic processes remained stable for over a year. That's fantastic. There was no real need for quite a while to change them around, because no new theory had appeared over the horizon. I hadn't dreamed up anything that was significant enough to mess up these basics. There just wasn't any reason to, until the system of native state, first postulate, second postulate, third postulate, and fourth postulate, suddenly explained why psychoanalysis had had such a bad time of it. This suddenly explained also why it was more beneficial to get a preclear to forget than to remember. This explained why an individual had his knowledge in such an occluded state. It explained so many of the principles with which we daily work that it, of course, required a revolution in the six basic steps. And so, such a revolution we have. Now, in its crudest state, the first application of this was intensely workable, something you must not lose sight of. Whatever the theory on top of it, the first was intensely workable. I'd invented a process called union station, using simply other people. Now, the other people theory was that an individual simply looked at other people and discovered that there were other people. It was no more complicated than that. In short, the methods applied in the six basic processes have not been too much deranged. But union station was evolved as simply a method of working the R2 step, which is just other people. Now, in evolving it, I noticed a great peculiarity. What did you know about the other person, and what did the other person know about you, was producing a faster result on tougher cases than would normally have been suspected. It was an interesting thing that this actually was doing things to cases which were hitherto untouchable by the earlier six basic steps, six basic processes, six levels, the originals of this. Well, I worked with this for some little time, and then I got the strange idea that there was something here that wasn't quite right. And, in a way, because day after day I checked with the auditors who were running it, and I didn't find anybody exteriorizing. Wow. Nobody exteriorizing on this process. Well, you were remedying their havingness of people, you were doing this and you were doing that, but nobody was exteriorizing on the process. There is something wrong here. Well, I had it in the back of the head already that there was something going on here that needed a little further investigation. So we simply flipped the process. Something don't know about people. See? Well, actually, I'd done a theoretical lineup on this and had been speculating and fooling around with don't know and do know and first postulate and second postulate, and I forgotten what it was, but I had some original theory on just exactly why it'd be I don't know as the first postulate. I think it's something on the order of the Thetan knew everything, so he'd have to say he didn't know something or something like that, but I don't think it was that plain. There was some kind of a proof underlying it, which I at this time have forgotten, and it's not strange that I would forget it, because look at the subject it's on. And I'm not going to stand here and scan it and do so forth with it to pick it up, because it's not that important. Probably be found on an earlier U.S. lecture. But here, we had a process that should have exteriorized people, and it didn't. So there was something wrong with knowingness. And man, Scientology is the science of knowing how to know. And if there's something odd or peculiar or random about the subject of knowingness itself, let's get busy. So I did, and put into the lineup with great speed some cases running on. Tell me something you don't know about that person. Nothing more specific than this, you see. And man, did we start to crack up cases. Now, the funny part of it is, as long as I was shepherding these cases, as long as I was doing something with these cases, this command never came into question. It was the darndest thing you ever heard of. It was very relaxed, the whole thing. Very relaxed, believe me. Tell me something you don't know about that person. Tell me something that person doesn't know about you. See, this was all. And it was sufficiently good and sufficiently without bugs. Worked that way that we found people popping out of their heads and so forth who had never exteriorized before, and we were off to the races. Now, that was put in as, you can shudder about it a little bit now, but that was put in as the first level down around locational processing. You merely got the session started, got him oriented in where you were auditing him, and blasted him right straight into what we called first postulate union station. Well, it was working, and it was working well. It was turned over to the HAA class in the United States to discover what the optimum command would be. And I don't know how these guys managed it, but they managed to spin each other neatly on the original. Now, whether or not they were just dumb, whether or not they couldn't maintain enough ARC to keep a semblance of a triangle, whatever they were doing, I don't know. But they couldn't run. Don't know about that person. And the result was, a further look, is what we were doing was not knowing. We were unknowing, you know, or not knowing. And evidently, the sense or meaning of this was never being delivered. It just never was being delivered. Now, whether or not they put the misinterpretation on to don't know, or interjected a new postulate into the process, or what, it simply didn't work. But we must not lose sight of this fact, regardless of whether they spun the whole population of the United States. The point was that a group of HGC auditors and myself ran the process successfully and cleaned up every case that was outstanding for the HASI in the United States. We cleaned up every case that had not received proper benefit on something you don't know about that person. Don't lose sight of that. We put these guys on top of the world. We exteriorized them and sent them away. And I take my fingers off of it, and something else happened. We mustn't lose sight of, you might say, the generic step. Or the next thing you know, it's whether or not we hold the scalpel with a little finger out or something that counts. So we mustn't lose sight of that process. Do you hear me now? It was run with no further instructions than that. It was run with good ARC. The auditors who were running this, remember, were hot auditors. They were good auditors. They'd handled an awful lot of cases. They'd had a tremendous amount of training. I'd worked with them an awful lot. It may be that it simply requires a very fine auditor to run the process. See? That may be all that is an error. Because let me assure you, you wouldn't think that anybody could get in trouble with separateness. Somebody from whom you're separate. Somebody who's separate from you. You wouldn't think in spotting people and getting separateness that anybody could get in trouble. But let me assure you that a very short time ago, some auditors that I've always looked on as good auditors got into serious trouble with this process. They ran their pre-clears out through the bottom of the barrel on it, cut their havingness to pieces, and that was that. Well, you say offhand, of course, separateness probably would reduce somebody's havingness. No, it won't. It won't. A guy can't have as long as he's sitting in the middle of something. He can't have a pie if he's sitting in the middle of pie. He's got to have a little tiny bit of observational power to find out about the pie. Otherwise, he's going on intuitive or speculative knowingness. Have I got a pie or haven't I got a pie? Am I in the middle of Earth or am I in the middle of a pie? You know, you get that idea. So it'd be almost impossible for somebody to shoot his havingness to pieces by running separateness, but three auditors did so. So much so that they knew positively that the process was in error. Now, that's something, isn't it? Now, you and I know that we might chip off having this a little bit. We'd know that we shouldn't run separateness without flattening, at least spotting people. See? Preferably by flattening both spotting objects and people. I don't think even a session was open. I think the having this was shot to pieces by something else, just lousy ARC with the pre-clear or something like this. See the accidental factors that can come in. Well, now, you wouldn't think then that this process, separateness, could reduce somebody's havingness, but in somebody's hands it did. You wouldn't think, and I never dreamed, that first postulate Union Station would land somebody in a confusion. And yet, in auditors' hands, who were operating without close supervision, remember, they were student auditors, it nevertheless had things going at sixes and sevens. See that? Therefore, we had to evolve a safe process. And do you know that that has happened almost every time in Dianetics and Scientology? I've evolved one that worked, and then I've had to evolve one that was safe. This is fantastic when you come to think about it. One that worked. So myself and a half a dozen other guys sitting around got to run this and just do fine with it, you know. And, you know, how to run an engram. How to run an engram originally never occurred to me to give anybody any technology on how to run an engram. I showed him the engram and told him it had to be gone through a lot of times in a regress state. And you flattened it real good and you watched the tones come up. And if you didn't watch the tones come up, you dive for the earlier engram on the chain. And you ran that till the tones came up and then you got the guy into present time. Of course, you can understand that if you cut down ARC sufficiently on an individual while you're auditing him, that nothing will work. You understand that? If you just do the rudiments of auditing well, if you'll just acknowledge what the pre-clear says, if you will just listen to him when he says something, if you'll just find out what he's doing, if you'll just be interested in him, you'll find out that the damnedest processes will work. Do almost anything to him, and he'll come out of it somehow or another. So when a pre-clear comes back out of present time, there is just a little question mark. You know how in the comic strips they have a question mark sitting above your comic strip character's head, you know? Well, there's a little question mark made out of solid brass sitting immediately above my head when I see somebody come back from a session running the processes we're running out of key with the rest of the world, you see. Boy, this... You can't kid me about these things. Boy, this must have been bad. See? This must have been stinking. This must have been... Well, Ron used to talk about basic a lot. I don't know. Have you had any idea of basic? Just a moment while I run over and get some peanuts off the vending stand there. You know, it must have been bad, see. I know what I'm talking about. Because I've had poor auditors running things under supervision to this degree. I've taken two patients in 1947 when the U.S. government inadvertently or accidentally financed the original office of Dianetics in Hollywood. Gave me all my back pay as a disabled veteran at one fell swoop. And I promptly fitted out an office and went to work. And I took two patients. Every time I didn't have enough time to run engrams or patch them up one way or the other, I'd take two patients, and I'd shove them into a little side room, and I'd tell one to finish running the engram I had found in the other out, and they would, and everything would be fine. Oh, I mean, no more instruction than that? Of course, the guy could always open the door and say, "Hey!" He's just curled up in a small ball. What do I do now? But the funny part was it never happened. It has to be bad auditing to have anything like this happen. Don't kid yourself otherwise. And don't try to kid me. Now, of course, a lot of pre-clears will come in and tell you how bad the auditor was. And they're sitting there. I try to go into communication with them one way or the other. I find out I can't get in communication with them or give them an acknowledgement or drive an idea home. So I usually wind up by snidely saying to them, they never notice I have. Just how would you know whether it was good auditing or bad auditing? How would you know there was an auditor there? I think your report is, to say the least, based on a poor observation by a very bad observer. So I seldom listen to the public on how bad an auditor is. But when I see a process which I know runs well, not under careful supervision, but under careless supervision, producing bad results on people, the ideas which I have about the character of the auditing would not be printed. They just would not be printable. I don't have them revengefully, I just have them factually. I say, oh my God, no. Person must have been standing in the middle of the street spotting things, and the auditor went over to the curb and left him in the road of the tram, and you know, must have been terrific. So we mustn't depart from what we really know. In research and investigation, you mustn't falsify what you know just because somebody dubbed the flub, see? Just because there was some mopery and dopery on the high station. There's no reason we would shift all of our gears and throw away all of our information. Each process, practically, on the track, has gone through this evolution. It's workable, and then it's been made safe. And these processes have very often lost their workability in being made safe. Got that? But it didn't have any other choice but to make them safe, because people could seem to be able to handle these things poorly enough here and there to produce havoc with them. And if only 50% of the people handling it were still producing havoc with it, we had to make it safe, you see. But because this happened, there's no reason you and I should forget what the original process was, see? Because that was the one that must have been closest to workability. And even though that one maybe had to be run by a good skill and a high interest on the part of the auditor, it was nevertheless the workable process. So, First Partial Union Station is still the process which I would run myself on a PC. Why? Because I have a nice battery of results on it. And I haven't got any battery of results on later material. I've got a lot of hearsay. But I myself have, with my own two prefrontal lobes, taken the pre-clear out and chewed him up on this subject. Now, I know that it's a beefy process, and I know definitely that it is, to say the least, impossible to self-audit. See, that I know is impossible, because a couple of guys have tried it. That's horrible. They get in a little bit of trouble and they say, well, now let's see, what don't I know about this picture I see sitting in front of me here, you know, and all of a sudden spin, spin, spin. So I know the process is capable of and susceptible of misinterpretation. I know that the wording on the process is possibly more closely allied to or more closely associated with the first postulate, when you say, I don't know, because that is what the Thetan said. See, that is what he said. He didn't say, I am now going to not know this in front of me so that I can have a game about it. That wasn't what he said. He said, I don't know anything about it. Boy, am I nice and stupid. Now I can get into trouble. See? But you evidently run that without good, tight supervision, and we got woe and grief. As for my money, a hot audit of this with an understanding of what we're doing. The fellow was making a postulate. You see, that he doesn't know this and he doesn't know that. So it doesn't matter what he makes the postulate about. It's all right if he makes the postulate about things he really doesn't know. You understand? See, it's perfectly all right for him to make a postulate about something he doesn't know. But people will evidently do this and drain the bank of don't knows or something of the sort. They do something peculiar when they are not closely supervised. So the safe process is something you wouldn't mind not knowing. And the process that I know intimately works is something you don't know about that person, wall, picture, room, or anything else, but never self-audited. See? All right, we've got to be honest about this because we're doing what we're doing. We're not doing a fancy dress ball where we hide all of the stuff that was swept off the ballroom handily in a closet or under the rug. See? We're not trying to make a big show of a brilliant, well-advertised scale of processes. That's not what we're doing. And if we don't leave the dirt in the ballroom or at least tell people where we swept it to... The very funny part of it is we're liable to find the only thing of value in the ballroom was a small diamond earring that got dropped in the dirt and swept into the closet. If we never tell anybody where we swept the dirt to, see, we're in a mess. You've got to be honest when you're doing research and investigation. And I tried to be honest for these 5 years, but it's been very difficult because you get too honest or you get too factual. Or you try to tell people exactly where it comes from, and it often unsteadies them. They feel unsettled. They feel, well, if Ron was that hazy about it, gee, how do we know anyhow? You know, just a Q&A. It's a reactive mechanism. But I'm telling you here and now that this is a tremendous amount of the difference between the field workability of a process and its original opinion was simply this. And I perhaps didn't clearly understand this until recently. I myself didn't clearly understand it until recently. And that was that the process was in one form when it was working and tested and then was made safe. See, some little ramifications were put on it. A few little descriptions were put on it one way or the other that cautions and so forth, which might have taken out of it its life. So on the six basics, you'd certainly better know what the original wording was. Get it? All right. It's all right for Thetan to say, I don't know, even if he says it about something he doesn't know. He doesn't have to know it first in the original version and then say that he doesn't know it. Although this seems to be, for most people, the more workable version. See, that seems to be the more workable version. Something you wouldn't mind not knowing about that person. This seems to be safe, and the other one seems to be winding people up, I get on hearsay evidence, three or four times removed, into terrible confusions. I tell a preclear, now listen, you know what a postulate is? And he says, oh, no, I don't know what a postulate is. You know, postulate. Well, can you say you're standing here? And he says, I can say I'm standing here. I mean, the guy's real bad off, see? You're not any elevated intellectual discourse. You know? I say, well, can you say you're not standing here? I say, but that'd be a lie. Well, all right, can you tell that lie? Can you say you're not standing here? Oh, no. All right. And kind of working back and forth until he says he's not standing here. Say, I'm not there, or something. Is that streetcar that went by, say it didn't go by. And he'll say, yeah, I can say that. And then I tell him, now listen, I want you to say you don't know anything about this room. See? Just make the statement, you don't know anything about this room. But I do, he says. No, I'll just say you don't. Well, all right. I don't know anything about this room. Ceiling going to fall in? Lightning? And I say, now you got it? Got what we're doing? Don't know anything about this room. Now I tell you, to tell me something you don't know about that person, can you tell me something you do know about that person?
Well, let's see, they got a hat on. I can tell you, I didn't know they had a hat on. That'd be a lie, though. You know, that'd be a lie.
Well, all right. Okay, well, you tell me they don't have a hat on. But you don't know they have a hat on.
Well, all right, that'd make me pretty stupid, wouldn't it? Right fella like me shouldn't be made stupid, huh?
Well, all right, now, you see, I just want you to say about that person. You don't know they got a hat on. All right, that's fine. Now, that's swell. Now, let's find, tell me something you don't know about that person. Well, now, what do you mean?
There's a lot I don't know about. I don't know their name. I don't know their rank or serial number or anything.
Well, now, do you see them there? Are they there?
Yeah, they're there, all right.
Well, say you don't know they're there.
Oh, I get it. I get it. I get it. Yeah. I don't know they're there. I don't know.
All right, now that's fine. Now let's take another person. Yeah. Now, tell me something that you don't know about that person. Okay? No further explanation.
Well, he says there's some things I really don't know about him. All right, say you don't.
I don't care, just as long as you say that you don't know something about that person. Then we run it the other way, something that person doesn't know about you. Well, he doesn't know anything about me. All right, say so. And off we go, see? And that's the way it was being run originally. See? And I'm sure in many of these cases, it never even vaguely got across the idea. Never got across the idea at all that it was a postulate. Person just look at him and say, well, I don't know whether she's got any underclothes on or not.
Yeah, I don't know that. Well, I wouldn't know that either, would I? Yeah, that's right.
And the guy's stupidity started to run out. Quite remarkable. His knowingness began to improve, and after he'd been run on it for a few hours, he blew out of his head. And that's the way it ran. And you have my license across the board to run it that way. You have my license that if you really know how to audit and keep a pre-clear along and listen to him and acknowledge him and so forth, to simply take him out and say, see that person over there? Tell me something you don't know about him. Get the idea? So he gets infused, so patch him up, so what? There must be something you're doing. If he's getting too confused, and it must be an unclear basis where he is, there must be something wrong. Now, the safer process is, tell me something you wouldn't mind not knowing about that person. That is the safer process. That evidently gets nobody in trouble, and evidently unspins them, and so forth, and does practically everything but work fast. Huh. It should be an oddity. The reason it doesn't work so fast is because it's got more restrictions on it than the other process. See? The guy goes through more vias to arrive at the same point. See that? But it's the safe process. And I would say offhand, if you were handing this process out to a bunch of people to audit, you know, you had a group, you're going to give them some co-auditing and have them tow each other around and do this, I would say the safe process to give them would be something you wouldn't mind not knowing about the person, making a big specialty out of not knowing. Something you know and then have not know it. Remember, it puts a V on the line. Remember, it's a slower process. You got it? Now, there are always people around who are going to run it bad. This for sure. But at this stage of this unit, we do not have to assume that you're going to run it badly. With only one or two exceptions, this unit is in very, very top class on auditing. Now, where we have the first level, then, we have this. We have locational processing as the keynote and basic not knowingness. And we have those two things underlying it. But location, when not known, is lostness. and we're processing the lostness out of the pre-clear. We're letting him find himself, and then we're showing he can lose himself. We're letting him find himself and lose himself, see? Something you don't know about that person, we got him found, haven't we? Because we said that person over there, didn't we? So he's found, and now he says not know, and he's lost. All location is knowing. If you know you're not lost, you're not lost. I wonder if there are a great many Indian woods tales, which are very, very amusing, and many Asian tales are equally amusing. The sense of humor is almost identical in these things. And I remember a standard joke was told to me one time by a trapper up in Montana when I was a kid, and I've heard this joke told about 50 times since. It's a statement that the Indian makes. He said he's out in the woods and he's walking around in circles, and the trapper comes up to him and says, are you lost? And he says, no. He says, me not lost, wigwam lost. This one of these old wheezes. But there's something endearing about that joke. There must be, for the good reason that it's been told now, to my recollection, about 200 years. Just been current for an awful long time. Me not lost, wigwam lost. Well, if the pre-clear knows he's not lost, why, that's fine. But if he's worried about the wigwam, and he has no high level of knowingness and not knowingness, and no tolerance for not knowingness at all, the lostness of the wigwam will upset him. He will become emotionally disturbed because of the lostness of the wigwam. But if his knowingness is very high, of course he'd know where the wigwam was anyhow. And if his tolerance of losing things was very high, he wouldn't give a damn. And he would be able to look at both the body and the wigwam and move the two together, thus snapping terminals with the wigwam. You can do what you don't give a damn about. It's almost as if this is the... It's almost as if this is the central pivot on which ability swings. It's almost the hub of ability. You can do whatever you don't give a damn about. I recall the feeling of expendability on various expeditions. An emergency would come up of such magnitude that one got the idea of self-expendability, see? Well, you get a couple of boys on an ice floe, and it's cracking up. And trying to put a boat over the side in a roaring gale and pick them up off of that cracking up ice floe. And everybody gets the idea of their own expendability, but gets no idea of the expendability of the two men on the ice floe. You get the idea? And the ship, everything else becomes expendable. I've done some of the doggondest feats of seamanship. And I look at him afterwards and say, gee whiz, what do you know? Couldn't possibly have put a ship in there and gotten it out again in one piece. That's an impossibility. That just couldn't have happened. Particularly think of this when you're coming alongside of some mooring buoy or something like this that in a broad, wide harbor, and you're very carefully, you know, giving your commands to the wheel and giving your commands on the sheets. That's putting big sailing ships in this place, and that is awfully amusing anyhow, because it's a very complicated operation. And then the wind doesn't turn on and off with a throttle. The way you turn it on and off is with sheets and canvas and stuff, you see. So it's a little bit, your horsepower is a little bit out of control and can go further out of control at any instant. Well, putting the ship into this mooring buoy in the middle of a huge harbor, all the room in the world, a gentle breeze to maneuver in, everybody working fine, you know, and taking the greatest care doing this, you know, very smart, you know, overrun the thing and put her on a reach and then stab her up into the wind and make her stand. And with her sails fluttering, with the buoy under her bowsprit, you know, and drop a line on. Great care. Roaring gale, everything going to hell. Put her helm hard down, let the sheets run. snub the sheet in the block, you know, and then stab her around up to the wind, laying her alongside of something that isn't going to be there for about 5 seconds. See, it's going to be gone. Grab somebody off of it and go, see?
Duh.
You say, couldn't have done that. It was impossible. There wasn't room enough to turn a ship. There was too much wind to sail a ship. And as far as the sheets and everything else connected with the ship were concerned, they were totally unmanageable at the time. If you've ever had an idea of a jib sheet, for instance, coming loose and trying to secure the thing, it's flogging harder than any master-at-arms in the British Navy ever flogged anybody, you know. You get under that thing or around it, and it just knocks you silly. Here's a huge sail with a piece of line hanging on it, and it's just floundering and flying in the wind. Crash, crash, crash. You get under, darn near kill you. You know you can't handle things like that in a roaring gale. Well, these things will get handled. But what was the state of mind in which they were handled? Expendable. Yeah, the emergency was high enough so that an individual himself became expendable. So I would say that an auditor was sitting there worrying about his own case, worrying about the case of the pre-clear, and didn't consider the pre-clear terrifically. He considered the pre-clear a little bit expendable, but himself not so. Get the reverse on this, something like that. Might be able to run even the most elementary process on the six levels very, very destructively. I imagine he could do this. He'd have to work at it, though, you know. He'd have to omit every acknowledgement. He would have to disregard every originated communication. He'd have to upset the ashtray every few minutes. You see, I mean, he'd have to work at it to get this bad, but he would only get that bad by considering himself so terribly valuable. There's something there about protectiveness, and I suppose you could even get sufficiently protective of the pre-clear's case so that you'd start doing things wrong. Get the idea? It has to be a certain expendability. It can't be quite as grim as that in order to run the process. Well, we start looking around the environment at people all over the place, and we get the idea that, you know, there's enough world so that maybe we could expend some. So that there's enough knowingness around so that maybe we could not know some. Get the idea? And that these people are going off and getting lost all the time anyhow, but there's more people, so maybe the tolerance of lostness could rise too. I haven't got to stick with this body forever because there might be other bodies in the world. All of these considerations are there. And that's locational processing, whether it's run on objects or people. Now we've discovered something new in locational processing, that there's a whole category lying below the solid terminal. The basic purpose, evidently, in having people and objects is to have communication terminals and playing fields. All right. The facts of the case are that an individual gets so lost on the subject of energy flow and particles that it doesn't flow anymore, and therefore he can't even see or believe with any reality that any terminals exist. And evidently, what has to be patched up first is his consideration that energy can exist and is obtainable. Now, that seems to be important. So we could put it in like this. We could run locational processing on objects or people just to orient somebody, see, just to get him in session and squared around, and then we could have him start spotting power sources or energy sources. Then we could nag him a little bit, you know, about do they emit energy? And he'd talk about it a little bit with him, not nag him. And since when I say nag, I've seen an auditor to take me literally. Wow. And we could get this oriented, you see, very nicely and smoothly. And do you know we could run another process at that point, which again is adventurous. It's an adventurous process, but it could be run at that point. And you could get in this place, and he spotted all these energy sources, and you could then have him run an entirety of first postulate on the energy and the sources. See? Just something you don't know, the way I would run the command in the way you would if you never have any difficulty with the PCs and ARC. I mean, you don't know about that energy source, or something you don't know about that energy over there. Got that? It's an adventurous process. You could get beefy. But you would run this all the way around. And, of course, it would seem impossible that you would run something that energy doesn't know about you, and I haven't ever tested it. But just by the system that evolves, one would seem to believe that this would be the case, that you would run what that energy source doesn't know about you. Something you wouldn't mind that energy source not knowing about you would be the safe command. Something you don't want it to know about you, it doesn't know about you, would be one which we still know to be a workable command, if likely to throw the preclear into a spinny and confused state, occasionally. By the way, if a preclear ever gets into a spinny or confused state on something you don't know about that, you understand, why, it's evidently only necessary to ask him to not know a few things that he does know, and he seems to come out of the spin rather easily. And we can unconfuse the other process. What we're trying to do is getting to make postulates in agreement or not with the physical universe. We don't care. We're not making him practice lying. We're not making him reverse things, and we're not doing a lot of things. All we're doing is making him practice running the first postulate, so he should be able to run it on energy. Now, certainly this would change his energy manifestation. Now, if you're doing that, then you would go on and you would spot objects. You'd spot objects, and then you would spot people with him. And then, if you really wanted to get the show on the road, you would get objects he was separate from and objects that were separate from him and people he was separate from and people who were separate from him. You'd run those things until there was no comm lag at all, and then you would cut loose on something you wouldn't mind not knowing about that person, the safe command, or something you don't know about that person, which would be the command which could be supported, undoubtedly, by this time, by the PC. And that would finish off locational processing. Now, you'd take up the first and foremost tenets on the subject of terminals. The energy is the thing that comes from the terminal, but the energy at length becomes all important to the preclear. And having become all important to the preclear, he neglects the fact that he requires a terminal. And after that, he can go into an only one classification, and so forth. He said, it isn't necessary for me to have other terminals. I am a sufficient terminal. I want to give you something just in connection with that, which I just dreamed up yesterday, and then all of a sudden hit like a bolt of lightning. It was fabulous. I suddenly realized that granting of beingness was permitting other terminals to exist. See that? And the failure to grant beingness would, of course, just be an unwillingness to let other terminals exist. That's all. I mean, you can just take it out of the realm of the mystic. It's just simply, evidently, that. The ability to grant beingness consists of the willingness to let other terminals exist so that you could possibly rehabilitate the ability to grant beingness on an individual simply by asking him, what other terminals would you permit to exist, you know? And have him build up his tolerance on this, and all of a sudden he'd be granting beingness. Quite interesting. All right. So here we have, in the first step, what started out to be merely an orientation and drills, orientation, getting a preclearance session, and became something far more significant than that, and finally moved up into the echelon of rehabilitating both his desire for energy and terminals. See, and rehabilitated that to a very marked degree, and rehabilitated his not knowingness and so on. So he put an awful lot into that first level. It has a tremendous number of things in it, no. But remember, its first evolution was simply spot some things or notice some things in the environment. Got that? That was its first command and was workable and which did call it to notice. And the first underlying other people thing was simply something you know about that person and something that person knows about you or could know about you, you know. That was the first command of the knowingness part. of that basic, and it was discovered with that that people didn't exteriorize, but by saying something you didn't know about the person or something that person didn't know about you, we started to get exteriorizations. And from these two basics, we have developed the entirety of this first level. Now, we would interweave people and objects and separatenesses and so forth into that. Now, as far as separateness is concerned, the basic test on separateness was this. Things you're separate from in this room. And it was run for about 15 minutes with a gain. That was the first test when I first thought of it. And the next test that was run is something you could associate with in this room, which ran the pre-clear right down into the ground. Togetherness processes are apparently never workable. You say things you're together with, or so on. There's such a process as things you wouldn't mind occupying the same space with, but this is a very, very high-level process. That just tells a person that actually we don't have space. It's a consideration. That's what it tells him. But togetherness processes, things you wouldn't mind occupying, which we were using for a short time and so forth, will eventually run a pre-clear into the ground, but you run separateness forever, and it keeps on improving the pre-clear because it runs toward the native state at a great rate of speed. All right. Now, so much for that first level. I've given you quite a bit about the consideration which went into its construction. I told you something about all six levels. Each one of them has a set of considerations of one kind or another, or discoveries underlying it now, but it didn't have originally. It was just put there because it was a workable process. Before it became a workable process, of course, it had a theory behind it. I had a theory and invented the process. Then we tested this whole battery of processes, and we racked them up, and then after that, put them on the tone scale, and then after that, I remembered the theory that originated the process and began to work with it more. And we now have six levels of processing. If you are bemused or amazed because these levels are in a state of flux, you shouldn't be. You shouldn't be, really, because we're doing the same things that we're doing with the six basic steps, except we're just doing it a lot better, that's all. Now, we haven't changed things too much. But we are trying to more clearly understand, and we're trying to progress cases faster. And then remember the six levels of processing by the introduction of first postulate union station started to crack up all cases around that were hanging fire. That was done by very good auditing, by very sensitive auditors who were really on the ball, who followed the rudiments exactly, who did a good job of doing what they were doing. But when first postulate union station was run, then and there, and at that moment, I decided, and we decided, on discussion with auditors around, that we'd certainly better make six levels of processing. Now, these are evolving probably toward 27 levels of processing. That is the usual direction. You simplify, and then things become more complicated. Then you simplify, and they become more complicated again. Your only loss is if your simplification is not more simple than the original idea you had. And we're certainly backed up now into a very high level of simplification on these things. There's no use to speculate on the workability if you feel not at home with the material. Simply use the auditing commands and use them smoothly, obeying the rudiments very carefully. And if you're still very doubtful and you want to get gains on a pre-clear, just go back and use your old six basic processes. They're still very workable. They will miss a few pre-clears. We're trying to make a grand slam out of pre-clears and clean up the whole works with one set of processes, and that's our regular gain. So you see a little more advance is usually in the direction of running the tougher case that couldn't be run before easily, and running then perforce the easier case easily and well. Thank you.